This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Penguins account 20 minutes ago tweeting a picture of Sid, Gino, Chris Letang, and the Flower together on the ice pregame, and it actually kind of makes me a little melancholy to look at it. That game getting set to get underway here in a couple of minutes, but we're talking Steelers 26-18. 6-2, first place in the AFC North. Breaking it all down with good buddy Nick Faribault of PennLive.com as he joins the program. Nick, I want to start with Russell Wilson. I know last week when we talked about Russ and after start number one, and I know you mentioned it with Donnie Football as well, the arm strength and throws down the field was something that you were keeping an eye on. Did you see improvement with Russ in that regard against the Giants?
Oh, yeah, man. He maybe made the best throw he's made in 3 years on that shot to Pickens. Yeah, you saw the arm strength definitely improve. I didn't really feel like the only time I was like, where's the arm was there was one off platform throw that he threw that just died on him. But I thought that he drove the ball really well. He drove it on a line with velocity, too. Like, dude, that ball to Pickens wasn't a moon ball. That was just an absolute laser beam that went 45, 50 yards in the air. I thought his throw to Jefferson showed that off, too. I thought he was getting it out quick, getting it in tighter windows. His throw to Pickens that didn't count, not the first touchdown, but the second one that Pickens didn't get the second foot down, was a really good tight window throw, too, that showed off velocity. So, yeah, again, I thought it was maybe a calf issue where he maybe wasn't stepping into it as much on the plant leg. It seems like maybe it was that or getting the rust off, whatever it was. But, yeah, I thought it was all there. Looks like the arm is there, which is great news for the Steelers because Russ's best trade is always that arm and that deep ball. And clearly through two games, they are popping with that, with ease, actually.
Yeah, get up on ESPN this morning. It was either a graphic or they posed the question, like, who's the Steelers quarterback after the bye week? I mean, there isn't a universe now where they would make a change back to Justin Fields. This is Russ's team. I think, and I think a lot of people out there do as well, you included, but does the bye week give them an opportunity to include and install Justin Fields in red zone offense in situations, you know, with assuming that he gets healthy, and that's Justin Fields?
As long as the hamstring is good, I would say so, yes. The hamstring is not serious, so I do expect that to be something. Listen, I'm interested to see where they kind of utilize it. We talked about this last week, Jack, where I thought, you know, they wanted to get Russ to a rhythm and want to knock the rust off of him and didn't want to throw him in there without building that up. But I think now that you look at it, now you can start to get Justin in there. Russ has had two games. He's fully back. He feels kind of the rhythm of the game again. It's nothing that, you know, is going to change anymore. He's gotten a ton of reps through two games. And so Justin, against teams like, for example, a really good run defense like Baltimore, who is the top run defense in the NFL right now, Justin could definitely give you a different type of look and kind of help you in that red zone, those tight areas, right? And so that's a place to do it, especially because they were 0-for-4 in the red zone yesterday. And some of that was due to, obviously, the face mask and then Pickens not getting the second foot down. But they couldn't run the ball when they got into the red zone either, which is an issue. And so if you can bring in the misdirection, do some different things with Justin Fields and make the quarterback run game, which was a big part of their game through six games when Justin was in there, he ran the ball in multiple times just in the red zone. Yeah, I think that's part of what will help elevate this offense in different ways. But again, it's going to come out in a specific matchup. They're going to tease it every single week. I'm just interested to see when they finally do pop it out. It exists. It's in there. I just don't know when it's going to come out.
Nick Faribault covers the Steelers for PennLive.com. He's joining us right now on the Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Nick, Deontay Johnson getting dealt to the Baltimore Ravens today. Couple of questions off of that. First of all, what does that do for the Ravens, and does that make the Ravens, do you think, any better in your eyes as they bring Deontay Johnson into their offense?
Yeah, it gives them a third separator. They already had two really good separators, I thought. When you talked about Rashad Bateman and Zay Flowers, and Deontay kind of continues that trend. They don't really have a big body guy, which is interesting. It's a lot of guys that have drop issues that separate and can create after the catch. They're all like the same dude. If you were trying to prevent the Rashad Bateman drop against Cleveland, Deontay is the guy that might most likely recreate that play. I mean, even their fourth receiver is Nelson Aguilar, and he obviously has drop issues himself. So, yeah, it's interesting. But he does add another weapon to them. I also think if they had lost one of Flowers or Bateman, I think that the Ravens would have been in real trouble with their offense against better defenses. Now, you know, if Flowers gets hurt, Bateman gets hurt, Deontay's there, right? So they have a nice security blanket there. So he adds another dimension. And that's a loaded offense, man. I mean, think of those top three receivers with Isaiah Likely, Mark Andrews, and King Henry, and then Lamar's legs on top of it. That is really, really deadly. So that's really good. And on top of that, it keeps, you know, Deontay Johnson away from another contender, right? The Texans just lost Stephon Diggs, so he's not going there. Even though the Chiefs got DeAndre Hopkins, could they have doubled up and tried to get Deontay too? Sure. Keeps them away from the Chargers. It keeps them away from all those teams. So that's another kind of shrewd little bit there by the Ravens. And I think for the Steelers, it kind of ups the ante, right? This is the latest team in the AFC to get a receiver. The Bills got Amari Cooper. The Chiefs got DeAndre Hopkins. Obviously, the Jets have Devontae Adams, but a lot of the top AFC teams have gotten wide receivers, and they've gotten wide receiver help. And so it ups the ante for the Steelers, especially now that Roman Wilson's out on IR, too. You don't have the internal upside option anymore. So, yeah, it ups the ante for the Steelers to go out and make a move. It's just who. I strongly think, Jack, if Christian Kirk had not broken his collarbone, we would have seen Christian Kirk become a Steeler. But obviously that's out the window now.
What makes you say that?
I think he would have been the logical player that would be open to being moved, one. Because I'm not buying that necessarily, you know, Jacoby Myers and Darius Slayton are out there to be had necessarily for affordable prices. I think you could have gotten Kirk for a day three pick, which is kind of what the Steelers would have wanted, right? Like a fifth round pick. You could have gotten the Jags to take on some of his salary, and he would have been a definite upgrade to this room. And so he's under contract for multiple years, and so it would have been a nice marriage, too. He's young enough to where he can be a long-term piece for the Steelers. He would have been a nice marriage of kind of this long-term option, even though he's a slot guy. You know, Calvin Austin could play outside, so they could have picked Calvin out there. Kirk can block. So he would have been a really nice fit for them from just a lot of different areas. But obviously now that's off the market, and I'm just not sure what the market is right now, you know. Slayton is probably going to cost more than he's going to be worth because the Giants might want to re-sign him. You know, I'm not sure that the Patriots want to part ways with a guy like Kendrick Bourne, who might be interesting. You know, Cooper Kupp obviously got pulled off the wire. So, you know, I'm thinking, you know, when I'm looking at targets right now, you know, you're really looking at guys like Mike Williams and Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne, names like that who aren't super flashy. But, you know, you can probably get them for day three picks. It's just going to be, is there a target, you know, kind of on par with these guys that have been moved to where the Steelers can make a little bit of a splash?
Yeah, and the second question I originally had for you after the DJ trade was, what does it do to what the Steelers potentially could offer up to a team for a wide receiver? Deontay was traded along with a sixth for a fifth. Did you think that return was maybe a little on the cheap end, and can the Steelers get something of a player in similar caliber for giving up similar things that the Ravens gave up?
Well, the Steelers had basically set the Deontay price themselves in March when they traded for Dante Jackson. And so without a player involved, this is basically the same thing, right? This is what the Steelers would have gotten if they hadn't traded for Dante Jackson in that deal. That's basically what would have happened. And so I think they set that to a degree. Hopkins went for a conditional fourth. That was a fifth. I think that's where you're hovering around. I just don't know. Let's say the Steelers are probably in on Darius Slayton, right? They probably called about him just because they called about everybody, basically, right? They want a wide receiver. Slayton could theoretically go for a fifth or a fourth, but if the Giants want to resign him, they might bump that up to a third because they don't want to trade him. I'm just not sure there's an obvious candidate of the Deontay Johnson caliber. Mike Williams, maybe, I think, you know, if you believe in that upside and that he's just hampered by that Jets offense, maybe that's the answer. Because it seems like everyone that goes to that Jets offense is kind of swallowing into a sinkhole right now, because it's just a dysfunctional group right now. So maybe that would be – I think that is the one – Mike Williams is probably the one that makes sense where the Steelers could maybe trade a sixth-round pick, fifth-round, sixth-round pick swap, something like that, and have considerable upside, I think, to still get. Thielen is an older guy. Osborne, I think, is fine, but not a super, big-time upgrade. And so Williams is the one guy who, even though the tape isn't that great, you have flashes of brilliance, and you see the easy fit in the offense, right? He's a big contested catch receiver, fits with the deep ball mantra. He blocks. It makes sense.
Nick Faribault covers the Steelers for PennLive.com. He's with us now. A lot changes for the Steelers after the bye, Nick. That includes Cam Sutton reinstated after his suspension. How does he fit into the Steelers' defense, and do you expect him, with the sort of emergence of Beanie Bishop, couple interceptions in these last few games, does Sutton play right away, and does he get acclimated into the fold pretty much immediately, or does he kind of work his way in?
I think he's going to work his way in. He was off for 8 weeks. He hasn't practiced since before the season, right? So, I mean, that's a long time, Jack. That is a long time for practice. So, you know, conditioning, getting back into it, I think there's going to be a little bit of a ramp-up period for him, especially because, you know, there's only going to be maybe one practice this week, and they'll have an extra practice next week coming out of the bye, but it's not probably going to be enough. And Beanie has, over the last 2 weeks, I think, earned himself a little bit of grace. Like, I think he's earned himself a little bit of a leash. And listen, I'm sure he's going to have a role. Maybe he takes that dimebacker role right away. He's going to probably be the top depth cornerback on the outside right away, over James Pierre, although Corey Trice might be returning too. And, you know, how does that work out? So there's a lot of moving pieces here. I think eventually he does become that starting slot. Probably by the Ravens game, I would imagine he's in there, or at least at the latest by that Browns game on Thursday Night Football. But yeah, he's going to have a role pretty soon. And Steelers signed him to be a veteran depth piece. He can play slot, he can play linebacker, he can play outside, he can do a little bit of everything. So he'll have a role for sure. And I think rightfully so. I think he's a guy that can give them kind of a good communicator back there, and a guy that is sure to be assignment sound. I think that's something, you know, that Beanie Bishop has had trouble with over the last 2 weeks. It's been much better, though.
Of the guys that have been missing time, Nick, Zach Frazier, Nick Herbig, Matakevich, who do you expect maybe will take most advantage of the bye week to get healthy, and who will we see against the Commanders in a couple of weeks, and maybe who might take a little bit longer to get back onto the field?
Yeah, so here's the interesting thing. I think, you know, guys like Herbig, Frazier, Patterson, they will all be back for that game against the Commanders. That's what I've heard. That's what it sounds like. And so that's big news for the Steelers, obviously. Those are big boosts. I think Tyler Matakevich, Dylan Cook will be back. I think Corey Trice has a chance to be back, too, from his hamstring. I think he'll probably have his IR stint opened up here quite soon as well. So, yeah, the Steelers are in business with getting some of these reinforcements back, Jack. They've needed it, right? They're going to be full depth on that cornerback room. They're going to get their running back room back to full mast. They're going to get a huge boost, I think, to their pass rush and Nick Herbig and what he brings. He was so good before he got hurt. And so you're going to have a lot of faces to kind of bring back into the fold, but they're going to be even better for it. They're going to build out this depth pretty quickly. And so I think the biggest one to return is obviously going to be Frazier. I just think with what he did, he is a star. He really is. He played so well before he got hurt. He and Mason McCormick were really starting to build something there. And this run game is starting to really cook. Even with him out, I think with him back in there, they could really take the leap there and become, you know, a top 10 rushing offense throughout the second half of the season. And they face a lot of – despite facing – I think it's interesting. Despite kind of facing a lot of really bad offenses in the first half, they kind of flipped the script in the second half. You look at, you know, the Bengals, the Browns, the Ravens, the Eagles, a lot of these teams are not ranked very highly in defense. It's they're good teams, but their defenses are definitely attackable. So a rushing offense like that will come in handy for the Steelers in the second half of the season.
Nick Faerbaugh, PennLive.com with us as we move along here on the Fan Evening Show. Nick, what needs to happen? This will be my last question for you. I said before I brought you on, I think 6-3 is slightly more likely than 3-6 in the final nine games. But what needs to happen? What needs to change for the Steelers to get to, 10, 11, 12 wins as they, close out the regular season?
I think the biggest thing comes on the defensive side of the ball. I just think they need to stop being super predictable. I just think that's been a big thing, Jack. They don't blitz a lot. They blitz kind of rush four. They play a lot of the same coverages, don't disguise their coverages. I just feel like that's been a big part of why the pass rush has been neutralized at times, and teams have been able to attack them, right? With quick game and different things like that. Because the offensive coordinators, if you're playing cover one and cover three all the time, can go away from Minka Fitzpatrick, find the open spots in these zones, and attack it. And so I think that's the biggest thing that needs to change. If they could find, I think, more schematic versatility in the defense, I think the talent is always there. It always has been there. I mean, look at who they have from, the first level through the secondary. There's not much concern there for me. And so I think if you can get that schematic part of it kind of matched up with the talent part, that defense can really ascend from, what they are now, which is a slightly above average defense, to a truly elite defense like we thought they would be through the first 3 weeks of the season. I think they can really ascend there and become a really, really special group. And I think if you get that type of defense with the offense ascending as it is right now with Russ and crew, that could be a team that wins a few playoff games and at least threatens teams in the playoffs. And I think that's what the Steelers want this year. So I think that's what the biggest change needs to happen in the second half. It comes on that defensive side of the ball.
He's Nick Faerbaugh. He covers the Steelers for PennLive.com. Follow him on X at FaerbaughFB. Nick, has the video of George Pickens' elbow drop become any less funny to you 24 hours almost later?
No, it's incredible. It is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It is incredible.
Yeah. No, we were laughing pretty hard at it last night. So Steelers head into a bye. Couple of weeks. Washington Commanders. Nick, appreciate you coming on as always. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it as always.
Yep, there he goes. Nick Faerbaugh of PennLive.com. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates. It's a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the text line brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. During our chat with Nick, some breaking trade news across the NFL involving the Minnesota Vikings and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Vikings trade for Cam Robinson in exchange for draft compensation. Not sure what the compensation is, but Cam Robinson, pretty darn good starting left tackle with Jacksonville, 91 starts in his career, and that helps the Vikings out because Christian Darrisaw, their stud, one of the best in the game, is out for the season. So Cam Robinson, left tackle of the Jags, goes to Minnesota in exchange for some draft capital. That's some breaking draft news. I'm Jack Kilgrove. Coming up, another reason why I think 6-3 is more likely than 3-6 for the Steelers as they close out the regular season. Halfway through it, the Washington Commanders are the next opponent in a couple of weeks. But there's one statistic that is sticking out to me, and I can't help but get it out of my head ever since I saw it last night. What makes me think that 12 wins is very feasible for the black and gold. I'll let you know what that is after the break. It's the Fan Evening Show. Alrighty, what's up? I'm Jack Kilgrove. It's the Fan Evening Show. We are chugging away, chipping away, as Chase Johnston, our good friend, likes to say. We're just chipping away, baby. We are just chipping away. It's the Fan Evening Show. I'm with you until 10:35 tonight. The nightly sports call will feature Andrew Filippone and Bob Pompiani of KDKA TV. That will be on KDKA Plus and simulcast right here on The Fan. That's following us at 10:35. I want to hear from you at 412-928-9370. We're talking Steelers. We're talking about Fleury back in Pittsburgh. And the Penguins are up 1-0 on former netminder Marc-Andre Fleury and the Minnesota Wild. first period with about 7.5 minutes remaining in period number one. Penguins 1, Wild nothing. That goal by the Penguins was scored by Valtteri Puustinen, assisted by Sid the Kid and Matt Grelzik. 1-0 Penguins.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, so before the break, I had mentioned that there was one statistic that is leading me to believe that the Steelers finishing the season 6-3 is more likely than them finishing it 4-5 or 3-6. And 4-5 and 3-6 would put them at 9-8 and 8-9. 6-3 puts them at 12-5 and in a spot to win the AFC North outright. And I said one, and it's more like a 1A and a 1B. But I guess technically two different statistics. We'll get into it right now. The Steelers rank fourth in the NFL in both of these categories. That is average scoring margin and total point differential. And I guess they kind of both equal the same thing, but the Steelers fourth in the league in both. Scoring margin, the Steelers are winning all games by an average of 8.5 points per game. That is more than a one possession ball game. So on average in this season, the Steelers are winning their games by two possessions. And then total point differential, the Steelers are fourth, plus 68 in total point differential. Only the Washington Commanders, the Buffalo Bills, and the Detroit Lions have higher point differential in the green than the Steelers do. And to me, that makes me think that 6-3 to finish the year is way, way, way more likely than 3-6 or 4-5. To put it in perspective, the Lions' schedule this year, I mean, and the Lions are a wagon, don't get me wrong. The Lions look really, really good. Jared Goff is playing like an MVP candidate. The Lions' lone loss is a 4-point defeat at the hands of the Bucks in week two. And the Lions have beaten the Rams, the Cardinals, the Seahawks, killed the Cowboys, beat the Vikings by two, and then they just, again, killed the Titans 52-14. The Rams are 3-4. The Bucks, who they lost to, are 500 at 4-4. Arizona and Seattle are both 500 as well. The Cowboys are a game under 500 at 3-4. The Vikings, pretty damn good. They're 5-2, and they look like a team that could contend for the NFC. And then the Titans might end up with the number one overall pick. But if you look at what they did in some of these games, I think the Cowboys, despite being 3-4, beating them 47-9 is impressive. That's a good football team. And being able to hang in there and win on the road against a very good Vikings team, impressive. Falling at home to Tampa in week two, eh. So what the Vikings have done, what the Lions have done and who they've done it against, let's compare that to what the Steelers have done. They beat the Falcons in week one. Atlanta's 5-3 right now. That's a good football team with Kirk Cousins. Denver, 5-3 right now with a rookie quarterback in Bo Nix. Both of those games on the road to start the season. The Chargers, above 500. The Colts, 500. The Cowboys are 3-4. They lost to Indianapolis and Dallas, so their losses are two teams that are around or below 500. And in the recent weeks, the Raiders, 2-6, but I compare that to almost what the Lions did against a team like the Titans, who aren't very good. You take care of business. The Jets, also stink, aren't very good. You take care of business. And last night, you end up only winning the game by a possession. But is what the Vikings have done against similar quality of opponents more impressive, significantly more impressive than what the Steelers have done against who they've done it against? My answer is no. My answer is the Vikings' resume to this point with the record and who they've done it against might be only a little bit better than what the Steelers have done. And the teams ahead of them, Buffalo and the Commanders, we're going to find out a lot about the Steelers, I think, in a couple of weeks coming off of the bye against Washington. I think the Steelers have a decent enough chance to win that game. I'm predicting them to lose, kind of solely basing that off of the typical Tomlin trap stereotype that we're all used to. And then even you go a little bit further down the list in the point differential rankings, immediately behind the Steelers are the Vikings, or the Broncos, then the Vikings at plus 53 and plus 51. The Chiefs are plus 50. Chiefs are plus 50 and they're 7-0. What does that tell you? That they play closer ball games and they might easily as be as 5-2 or 4-3 as 7-0. I think the Steelers have as good a chance as any of these teams near the top that aren't the Baltimore Ravens to have an opportunity to really, really compete for an AFC championship appearance. And then, of course, a lot of that can change. Injuries can happen like they happened to the Steelers earlier in the season with the offensive line. You know, it's not out of the question to say that things can die fast for Pittsburgh, but I don't think that they will. I have confidence in Russell Wilson. I have confidence in Arthur Smith to call plays. I have confidence in this offensive line that's continuing to get better and that will get healthier when Zach Frazier, according to Nick Faribault of PennLive.com, should be returning from injury after the bye. One of the things that I didn't get a chance to ask Nick about, and we can pose it to you guys at 412-928-9370. Say Frazier does come back, keeps it up, and he only misses two games. Is Zach Frazier a Pro Bowler? I think he might be. I think Zach Frazier has a legitimate chance to make a Pro Bowl when it's all said and done. And that has to do with him, A, getting back and getting healthy, and B, keeping up what he did for the first half of the year when he was healthy. Couple other guys I think that have a chance to be on a Pro Bowl situation for the Steelers. Chris Boswell's one of them. And then if Russ keeps it up, I think he could be considered. Same with Pickens. Same with Najee Harris. They're getting the most out of these guys. And it's encouraging, encouraging as hell to see. 412-928-9370 is the number. Follow me on Twitter at JackWTOV9. Joel Nelson on the ones and the twos this evening as the Penguins now lead it 2-0 over the Minnesota Wild, 4:15 remaining in period number one. We'll talk a little bit more about Marc-Andre Fleury, these Penguins, and this game tonight. Also talk about some college football going on as well. Texas State and Louisiana Lafayette. Started a dynasty on College Football 25 with Texas State. They were fun to play with. And we can talk about whatever the hell you want at 412-928-9370. You can call us. You can text us. Feel free to spend your Tuesday night with me. Jack Hillgrove on the Fan Evening Show. We'll be back in a moment. Okay. Well, in 54 seconds of game time, Frederick Gaudreau and Jakub Lauko both score for the Wild, and we're tied at 2 at PPG Paints Arena. I mean, I can't say I'm surprised, Joel Nelson.
Me neither.
Because this is what we've come to become used to as people that watch the Penguins, especially this year. But this goal that the Wild scored to tie it at 2, Letang gets beat to the corner for the puck. They end up back with it. Matt Grelzik just slaps his stick at this puck, ends up back in Minnesota's hands, and they score. They look lazy, they look lethargic, they look slow, and they look uninterested to be playing hockey, which blows my mind. 14-9, the shots on goal. The Penguins, despite scoring twice and scoring two goals to start this game, only have 9 shots on net. It's incredibly, incredibly frustrating. Nearing the end of period number one, it looks like we're going to stay tied at 2. I'm almost baffled, but in different ways, I become baffled. Like, it's like, okay, well, the Penguins give up a 2-goal lead early and quickly. We've seen that time and time again. I mean, these guys have had almost the most catastrophic start to a season that you could concoct. They have 2-6-3 wins, both of them on the road, scoring 6 times in a hostile environment, impressive, sure. And then they score 6 goals and beat Buffalo. But it took them 6 goals to beat Buffalo because they gave up 5. And since that game against the Sabres, they haven't won. And not only haven't they not just lost, in a ton of these games, they've been embarrassed. And all the momentum is on that visiting bench right now in Minnesota. And if I had to take a guess, the Penguins will probably lose this game and end up as 3-7-1 to start the year. And I don't want it to take away from, you know, all the nostalgic stuff with Marc-Andre Fleury playing for the final time in Pittsburgh, more than likely. But, I mean, come on, guys. Wild on a power play, too, with 1:18 left, so they'll have 1 minute and change of a one-man advantage to start period number 2. 412-928-9370. The Penguins piss you off? Let me know. Give me a call. Hit me up on Twitter as well. We're talking Steelers as well. Before the break, I was talking about how I feel about the Steelers and the fact that I think that they can finish 12-5. And we had a commenter on the YouTube stream, Alan, while we went to break, asking what I think is going to happen. So I do have them losing in Washington. I think that will be your typical Tomlin trap game if Indianapolis wasn't already. Philadelphia, yes. And no, I don't think they go 6-0 in the division. I think they either go 5-1 or 4-2. I haven't really decided yet, 6-3 or 5-4, but I'm leaning more towards 6-3. I think they drop 1 to Baltimore, and I think they beat the Chiefs at home. I think the Steelers take care of business in a low-scoring game against Patrick Mahomes in a hostile environment on Christmas Day. Now, if they don't, it is what it is. But I feel good about the Steelers in that ballgame. And it's, you know, just under 2 months away, and a lot can happen between now and then. But based off of what I've seen these last 3 games and these last 2 with Russell Wilson, with everybody healthy and with them firing on all cylinders and the defense playing to its top-tier caliber, they can compete with just about anybody in the National Football League. And unfortunately for the Steelers' case, why I don't think that maybe they're not quite there yet is the one team that I think that they are outgunned and outmanned by is the Baltimore Ravens. But it's AFC North ball, and I think the Steelers will get them at least one time in these final 9 weeks of the season. Just about, 20 minutes or so away from first pitch in Game 4 of the World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees. The Dodgers can close it out tonight. They're up 3-0. The Yankees have stunk, and a lot of stuff hasn't gone their way. Balls have bounced funny you know, long at bat against Mookie Betts last night. Anthony Rizzo could have made a catch in foul territory. Ends up being a Mookie Betts RBI, I believe, at that point to make it 3-0. But the Yankees have also just had guys not show up. Aaron Judge and Jazz Chisholm. Ben Kasparius starting for the Dodgers tonight. Luis Gill for the Yankees. Joel Nelson's on the ones and twos. Jolie, do the Dodgers close it out tonight?
I think so, Jack. It just feels like everything is, it's going so well for the Dodgers, and it's just going so opposite for the Yankees, where it's been pretty clear the Dodgers have been the much better team in this series. The Yankees have barely posed a threat to Los Angeles in this series. And the first game was close, of course, but then the Freddie Freeman walk-off grand slam, and the Dodgers have not looked back since. I mean, Freddie Freeman has hit a home run in all three games of the World Series so far, and you would think whether he hits another home run tonight or not, and the Dodgers still win, he probably gets MVP. I think it's the Dodgers tonight for sure.
Yeah, I do too. And Freddie Freeman is just so good at hitting baseballs. It's insane. And it's funny too, like everybody that was against the Dodgers and the Yankees in the World Series because it's the two top markets, they have buku payrolls, you'd think that that would give you one hell of a World Series all the way down to the wire. 6-7 games, close ball games, late inning heroics. Not this. And you got to tip your cap to Dave Roberts and the Dodgers. There we go. Because they've been hilariously the better team against the Yankees, who won 90 plus games and have had some of the best offense all season. Dodgers Yankees just after 8 o'clock. We'll keep tabs on that, as well as the Pens and the Wild are tied at 2 after a period. Coming up, I want to shift gears to the Pitt Panthers. Massive, massive game this weekend against the Mustangs of SMU. Pitt 18th in the nation, undefeated, 7-0 for the first time since 1982. And the Mustangs, in year one for that program in the Atlantic Coast Conference, or All Coast Conference, if you want to change the name, because SMU, Cal, and Stanford are in it, they're pretty damn good too, 4-0 and 7-1. But there is a very, very legitimate chance that both starting quarterbacks in this game, whom have had really, really, really good seasons for their respective teams, might not be playing. Eli Holstein, up in the air. Pat Narduzzi, very gun-shy to release any information on that in his media availability yesterday. And Kevin Jennings, the quarterback for Southern Methodist, also banged up. I think there's a good chance that we see both of them, but I also think there's a chance that we see it neither of them in this game. So we're going to talk about that in the 8 o'clock hour as well. Stephen Thompson, who covers Pitt for the Post-Gazette, will join us at 8:25. We'll check back in on the World Series again throughout the 8 o'clock hour, and again at the end of the 8 o'clock hour. At 9 o'clock, we'll shift it to Pitt Hoops and George Michalowski of the Portal Report, and he covers Pitt basketball for Pittsburgh Sports Now. He will join us as the Panthers Hoops squad gets set for opening night inside a week against Radford. And then at the end of the 9 o'clock hour, and it might carry over into our first part at 10 o'clock before we say goodnight and pave the way for the nightly sports call, some of the worst Halloween candy of all time. I told Joel to think of a couple. Hopefully those wheels have been churning upstairs for you, Jolie, because there are some funny ones out there that just are absolutely heartbreaking to hold when you dump out your pillow sack, your pillowcase of candy when it's all said and done at night of trick-or-treating. And if you have any funny trick-or-treating stories when it comes to your kids or when you were a kid, hit us up at 412-928-9370. 93.70. Fan weather is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Check out the 24 Silverado 1500. It's 1.9% financing up to 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms and conditions are at sunchevy.com. Clear and mild tonight, a low of 58, and tomorrow and Thursday for the end of October, highs in the high 70s to low 80s. So get out, get those clubs out, go play some golf, do whatever, and take advantage of the very, very warm weather that we're having at the end of October. More of that coming up on the Fan Evening Show. Pit talk, more Steelers talk. Pick up the phone at 412-928-9370. We'll be back in a moment on the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jack Hillgrove. We'll be back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.